some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. I've just had to sit up straight in the chair, put both feet on the floor, and I'm going to have both hands on the desk tonight because we have got the extreme privilege and honor of having Mr. Bill Sienkiewicz be our VIP special guest star. If you don't know who Bill is, you are going to be in for a major treat of epic proportions. I kid you not. You will, if you are hearing his name for the first time tonight, you will love Bill by the time the show is over with. I'm going to introduce him in just a real quick minute, but I want to let you know from a show standpoint, we are booked all week with fantastic folks. Make sure you set your calendars. Surprisingly, we're at 7 o'clock for 4 days in a row. That has not happened in a long time, but we've got Bill tonight. We've got author David Swatling, who is in town from Amsterdam tomorrow, and we're going to sit down and do an interview, I think, at the CBS studio lot up in Studio City tomorrow, and we'll be playing that tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Wednesday, we have Mr. Richard Wynn with Wynn Locations here in Hollywood. They do set sourcing for the movie and TV business, so you want to tune in for that. Chris Ando joins us on Thursday for his new book called Delusions of Grandeur. It's a 5-star rated book on Amazon.com, and it talks about the seedy and underbelly side of St. Louis and apparently some other cities as well. And on Friday, on the Friday Night Dance Party, we have Mr. Joseph Strider. He's going to be interviewed with Mary Lou Monroe Ray live from Brisbane, Australia, even though Joseph is back in Pennsylvania with a special start time of 4 p.m. Now, my next guest, or my only guest tonight, is Mr. Bill Sienkiewicz. I want to, before I bring him on, I want to kind of roll out the carpet for him and introduce him a little bit here. I met Bill probably going on about 2 years ago, probably right at this time of the year. My producer, Brian Pothier, who is brilliant, gifted, and extremely compassionate when dealing with people who at the time had no talent or abilities, meaning myself, we recorded a very short EP called Eyes Wide. Fast forward, Brian says, you know, if you think about doing this ever again, you probably want to start having some singing lessons from, you know, somebody who's really, really good. And I know just the person. His name is Bill. He's a good friend of mine. I've worked with him for several years. And, you know, let me introduce you to. Well, some time had passed, and we were at an event where Bill and Brian were both playing for Peter Asher down in Los Angeles. And after the event, I had the great opportunity to shake Bill's hand, but it wasn't for several more months that we actually were able to, you know, get the meeting of the mind, so to say, when Brian said, have you talked to Bill? You need to get your singing lessons going if we're going to do this new album. Well, little did I really understand the depth and spectacularity of Mr. Bill when we met. Bill has been a instrumental figure in the music business for over 30 years. He's had hundreds of songs placed in TV, film, commercials. He's been a recording artist. He's an extraordinary bass player. He sings songs. He writes songs. We're going to play two songs and maybe a surprise ending to the show tonight of music from Bill's latest album, So Far, So Good, and so much more. But before I tell you everything about him, it's time to bring Mr. Bill Sienkiewicz onto the program and welcome him. Bill, how are you?
I am great, Garrett. Thank you very much for that incredible intro, and I love the enthusiasm of your in-studio audience there. I heard them applauding wildly at the beginning.
Yeah, wild applause. You know, you got to take that where you can. Actually, Bill, I could go on for about you for about 6 hours without taking a breath, so I figured
please
that
do.
You know, people, well, and you would do it so much better. So I don't even know where to start because there's so much I want to know about you, but I have the benefit now of calling you my friend, and I'm very honored that you know, I can do that and actually say that you'd actually take my call if I called you. So for the benefit of the listeners that are hearing you for the first time, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and the mystique of Bill Sienkiewicz?
Well, I can start at the beginning, just as to who I am and where I grew up, and I was born in New York City, New York, and when I was a kid, I moved straight north about 15 minutes to a place called Yonkers, New York. If you haven't been there, lucky for you, because I grew up in a neighborhood that was kind of tough and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I fell in love with music when I was 4 years old. I honestly have a very distinct memory of being 4 years old before I even moved from Manhattan. That's how I know, because I moved when I was five. Sitting on the edge of my bed with one of those little, like a little kid toy guitar that doesn't really do anything. It just has little plastic strings, and you can't really play it.
Mm-hmm.
With me sitting on the edge of the bed, playing, making believe, like in my head, that I guess I was on the Ed Sullivan Show or something. I'm 57 years old now, and I say that with great pride, because for many years in the entertainment business, you kind of have to lie about your age. When you get to be 57, you say it with great pride. You know, now you go, hey, I'm still working, and I'm 57, so take that. But this would have been 1962, and I remember just I kind of wanted and knew I would be a musician. And I got started when I got out of high school. A couple of months after I got out of high school, I met a friend of a friend, one of those things, and he said he was playing in a little club and said, do you play guitar? I said, yeah, a little bit. And he said, do you sing? And I said, sure, I sing. And I had never done any singing, but I kind of figured I could. And that was 1976, actually 1977, early 1977. And it's pretty much, with a couple of minor exceptions, it's pretty much the only job I've ever had was being a full-time musician. So I've been very, very lucky in that regard.
So, okay, one of the things that I really admire about you, Bill, there's too many to list, but one of the things that I'm really impressed about knowing who you are as a musician is that you have such an incredible memory for virtually every song ever written. What I say that in a very blanket statement, but, you know, if I asked you about anything having to do with 60s, 70s, 80s music, rock and roll, pop, even a lot of blues, I mean, you know pretty much every genre that's out there and can play a song just like it's, you know, fresh on your playlist. How is your memory? How did you get to be such a good study of music? And is it just one of those things that comes naturally to you?
It's probably a little bit of some of it's natural. Some of it's probably the environment. A lot of it is necessity. You know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. And I don't read music. I'm self-taught. For those people that can kind of visualize this, if you play an instrument, I play left-handed and upside down, which is not what Jimi Hendrix did, and it's not what Paul McCartney does. It's left-handed but strung right-handed, meaning I strum with my left hand and the fixed string, the bass string, is on the bottom. So whether you play left-handed or right-handed, the bass string should be on top. I play with it on the bottom. So what that means is I never really learned how to read music. I could never have anybody really teach me. So as that plays into the memory part, everybody else could take out a songbook and say, oh, I haven't played this song in 6 months, but let me just look at the music and I'll play it. I couldn't do that. So I had to memorize every single note of everything. I would probably guess that I started somehow by the grace of God with a good memory, and then it just got better. But my song list is that's one of my strong suits is I'll play with any number of local bands, kind of the good old fashioned, you know, bar bands. And I got kind of a reputation for, they could call me on Friday afternoon and say, hey, our bass player or our singer, you know, can't make it tonight. Can you just jump in? We've never met you. And they would send me a song list of 100 songs. And I would say, yeah, I know, you know, 95 of them. Let's go. That remains to be almost my claim to fame, if you will, because I'm not one of those, as they call, a chops guy, where there are some great guitar players who can just play really fast. And, you know, I'm not that guy. I just have always been able to remember songs and remember parts. And I'm always the one that remembers, you know, on the very end, there's that one little weird note, the weird harmony, and I always remembered that. And I can't really explain why, but a lot of it is kind of learned behavior, I guess we'd call it, because I just had to do it. So I don't know if that entirely answers the question.
No, that's great, because I am just in awe, because, you know, one of the things that I'm struggling with right now is going into the rehearsal studio and putting together a performance of, you know, five or six songs. You know, and Bill, you and I know, you coached me on a lot of this stuff, and here I am trying to, you know, go out there and for songs that I've written, going, what was that line on the third verse that, you know, the second word in? Or, and I'm like, I have no excuse. Why can't I be more like Bill? And so I struggle every day with, you know, things that are silly like that. And, you know, you have this mastery of, you know, thousands of songs just at your fingertips. So I bow down to you for that. But can I ask you real quick, when you got ready to, you know, take music seriously, you know, at some point, you know, whether, you know, it's at four when you're still in Manhattan before the move, or as you're, you know, getting into your teen years, when did you decide that you really wanted to be a bass player versus any other instrument?
Well, that is a great story, at least from my, I don't know that it's an exciting story, but it's something that I think a lot of musicians at any age can learn from. I used to play in, you know, a lot of club bands and wedding bands and whatever I could do, and I've always been essentially a singer, and I kind of accompany myself on guitar. So you mentioned your great producer and my great friend, Brian Pothier. Brian is a great guitar player. I'm not one of those guys. I'm kind of a play-along-with-myself kind of guitar player. And so
okay.
I was doing a lot of gigs like that. And understanding that your question is, how did I become a bass player? How did I get serious about that? I was doing gigs for this agency, and they would hire me as a singer and a guitar player, and I would be in any number of bands. And one day they said to me, oh, this other band, they need somebody. One of their guys quit. And I sat there and did this kind of interview, not really an audition, just an interview. Would you be interested? And are you open on these dates? And I said, yes, yes, yes. And I walked out of the agency's office thinking I was going to be the guitar player in this new band, in this other band. And the keyboard player who was with me said, oh, well, I probably should have mentioned this to you, but no, we need a bass player. And I said, well, that would have been an interesting thing to tell me. Yeah, this is really the truth. My friend Steve, he might be listening. I said, Steve, I'm not a bass player. He said, I know, but if we told the agent that, he'd go into this whole thing about, oh, the band should take 6 months off because he'd be afraid to book us. You know, and I do understand that premise. I mean, they have work booked. The bass player quit. They can't really find anybody. So they just threw me in, and the band said, look, everybody shut up because, you know, if we start telling the agent you're not a bass player, he's not going to hire us.
So it was
the cart before the horse, and I just said, okay. And for 6 months, I was the worst bass player to ever keep a gig. I really was. If it was not for the extreme circumstances, I would have been fired, you know, after the first gig. They hung in there with me, and I did know a lot of songs, which goes back to the other comment where I wasn't really a bass player, but I could plunk by enough because I just knew a lot of songs. And I guess by the time they figured out I wasn't a bass player, I became a bass player, if that makes sense. You know, but
sure.
They hung in there
yeah.
for 6 months, and by the time 6 months was up, I could get by well enough. And I have such a clear memory. That was in Yonkers, New York, sitting in the office. We had calendars out, and they're telling me the money, how much I'm getting paid. They're giving me the address of the clubs, and this one's over here, and this one you have to wear a tuxedo for this wedding. And I'm saying, yes, yes, yes. Never once did anybody mention that I was going to be the bass player until I walk out the door.
Well, there you go. You know, and thank God for that, because, you know, here we are all these years later, and look at where it's brought you. So, you know, you said you'd start out really as a singer, and, you know, by default you got into the, you know, the guitar playing and the bass playing. So how did you – at what point did you decide that, you know what, I'm gonna be a singer here? And, you know, because, you know, you're a big guy. I would expect to see you on, like, the football field on a Friday night, you know, with Friday Night Lights, you know, crashing around with your high school football team. Was, you know, singing something that, you know, was really cool and hip to do where you were growing up?
Well, I didn't sing when I was in high school.
Okay.
I played football and lacrosse. I kind of tinkered around with the guitar, but I didn't really play. My older brother was in a band. He's still playing to this day. He's 11 years older than I am. I'm 57. He's 68, and he's still playing in club bands in Connecticut, and he sounds great.
Wow.
He was my big brother, and he was the first musician I ever met. And, you know, every once in a while, he would come home from a gig, and I would just go, wow. He's out there singing in front of people and coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning. This is cool. You know, that's really was my perspective. And so when I kind of fell into it, you know, when I kind of lied and said I sang and played guitar, which I I don't think either one was really true. I went out and did my first gig, my first paying gig in Tarrytown, New York for $25. My very first gig, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but my very first gig was actually in a brothel, a house of ill repute, a whorehouse, which I can't say we got paid. I think we got $3. Somebody came in and tipped us, but there was essentially no one there. The people that were coming there were there for a different reason altogether, as you might mm-hmm. understand.
Absolutely.
But my first real gig was about an hour north of New York City in a little bar that was as small as any place. I can't even think of a place that's that small. But all our friends came to see us. So 25 people came. You couldn't fit another body in there. And I just thought, oh, my goodness. They give me free, you know, burgers and fries. We played all my favorite Beatles songs. My friends stood on the table and clapped and screamed like we were at Carnegie Hall. And then I got $25. This is the greatest job ever. And I really, it sounds innocent and cute when I say that, but I'm not trying to be funny. That was really my feeling was, oh, my God, I get to do this. And at the end, they give me $25. I'll do this for the rest of my life. And
there you go.
I was right because I am doing it for the rest of my life.
You are doing well. And those chapters are actually on page 4 and 6 of your book called The Amazing Adventures of a Marginally Successful Musician. It's available on your website, BillSinK.com. By the way, if you're tuning in tonight, we've got musician, singer, songwriter, bass player, and author Bill SinK. You can get a link to his website on the Rated G Radio homepage there. And also, we're gonna jump around tonight all over the place, but he's got an album out called So Far So Good. I put a link to iTunes, so you can also click that and go and buy his music tonight. I think if Bill put his book on as an audiobook, we'd also buy it there too, but you can get a book directly from his website, and he may even autograph it to you if you go buy it. But going back to, if we just talk about your book for a second, I'm rereading it again for about the third time, and I will tell you, every time I read it, I forget how funny the chapters are and how funny the chapters are, how well written it is, but how much sound advice that you are really truly giving to the world about your experiences in the business. When did you decide that you wanted to put a book together?
I think it was something I always wanted to do. I took a creative writing class in my junior or senior year of high school, and I just loved it. It's a different mode of communication. You know, it's not writing a script. It's not writing poetry. It's when you're writing a book, it's essentially open-ended. You know, you see your own horizon. You write about whatever you want. There's no parameters. There's no topic. You know, it's the only topic the only topic I need to be concerned with is what I feel like writing that day. So it's so open-ended, it's very appealing to me. There's no discipline to it. And the reason I chose this is just some years ago, I remember walking into, you know, bookstores, which are now vanishing. They're going the way of the dodo bird. But when I would walk into a bookstore and you'd walk into the music aisle, there would be 20 books written by lawyers that were all titled How to Make $1 Million in the Music Business, How to Sell 1 Million Records, all that stuff. But next to it in the music section was all about who died of a drug overdose or who slept with so many women, you know, or how much money this guy made or this guy went bankrupt. All these musician stories that it was like, you know, fodder. You know, there was no information. There was nothing about any real musicians that I knew, because I'm sitting there thinking, I've been playing music now going on 40 years as a professional out there, really, you know, playing big places, small places, whatever I can do. And it just hit me that no one's telling a musician's real story. You know, as musicians, we pay taxes, we drive on the right side of the road, we vote. Some of us have children. We're not all rock stars or homeless people living on their girlfriend's couch. You know, that's the only two presentations that musicians have. There's either the bigger-than-life rock star who everybody wants to be just like him or her, And then there's that poor sack, you know, the sad sack of, oh, my goodness, my loser boyfriend who my father hates. And there's a lot of area in between. And I think there's just a lot of what I call the blue-collar working musician who just says, hey, I'm doing this for a living. I make an honest living. I work hard. I write music. I play music. You know, to make a living in entertainment doing this, you have to do a couple of different things. And it just never seemed like anybody put any light on that topic, on that situation. Everybody I grew up with, everybody I knew, all my friends right now, are all in the same boat that I am. But you would never know that there are hundreds of thousands of us out there if you just walked into the bookstore or read the magazines, because all you do is see either the top, you know, 0.001%, or you see all the people on Sunset Boulevard that are flipping burgers and that are working part-time jobs because their band can't quite make it. And the fact is there are a lot of us in between that are neither one of those extremes. We're just the blue-collar working-class musician, and I thought that needed to be told. I thought that story needed to be told and put in print, and that's where it started.
Well, the fact that you write all of the – I've never seen a book, by the way, that has – and I need to do an actual count, but you have something like, I don't know, 100 chapters in the book, and that sounds really crazy until you get the book because the chapters are short. They give you many times a humorous anecdote, and then you end each chapter with, here's the bottom line, folks. So, you know, you get your story because you're going to remember the story, but then you also get the lesson. Bill, you're a great teacher. You know, if you weren't in music, I would take a class from you anywhere, anytime on any subject. But at the end of each chapter, you give everybody the bottom line and say, here's what you really need to know about this and how to apply it in the real world. And, you know, a lot of times it's just such common sense advice. You go, well, like, of course, but you're right. You know, the books that you see in the bookstores or you see online don't tell the story. You're the only author that I know that is writing stories that people can actually read and actually take something away from and say, this is something that I can actually, I don't say build a career on, but it's certainly going to have me going in a much better direction than if I just, you know, read Rolling Stone or, you know, the top 100 hits of 2015. So I love the book. I really do think anybody who's out there who's in any form of entertainment, because I will call this a widget is a widget, because if you're a musician, singer, songwriter, whatever, connected to the industry, this is a book that will benefit you. So go to Bill's website, BillSinK.com. There's a link on the website or on the show page tonight to do that. If you're listening from West Star Radio from across the pond in the UK, Bill's last name is spelled C-I-N-Q-U-E. So it's Bill, BillSinQue.com. And you can check him out from over in the UK. Bill, because what's going to happen here? We're at 7:23. I will play two songs and end the show with one of your songs. We're going to play a couple of songs from your new album, So Far So Good. The first song is called All I Want Is You, and I picked it because it was my favorite song on the record. But can you do a little setup before we play that for the listeners tonight?
Yes, I would love to. That is a song that has been I wrote it with a great producer, guitar player friend of mine by the name of Per Scheller. He's a Swedish guy. He lives in Los Angeles. His last name is Scheller, and it's spelled K-J-E-L-L-E-R. So when you have a name like Sinke and another name like Scheller, you know, it's just we're rife with misspellings and mispronunciations. But he's a great friend of mine, a brilliant, you know, writer-producer. And we have had the extreme pleasure and privilege of getting a lot of songs on television, most of which have wound up not really by design, but it just kind of happened that way, on soap operas, in particular The Young and the Restless. Now, as to how you get that, our publisher is a company called Heavy Hitters, and they're great people here in Los Angeles. They get these songs on television shows. And so we would write whatever, you know. Some songs would sound like Elvis Presley. Some songs would just be something out of my head. Some would be by design. Some would be by accident. And Per and I wrote this song, and we sent it to our publisher and said, hey, this is a song. We just wrote this. It wasn't sometimes you write a song what they call on spec, meaning someone will say, hey, we'd like you to write a song that sounds like Elvis Presley. It should be about 3 minutes long. It needs a sax solo. You know, they give you things like that, parameters, and you have to write for it. Well, this was just one of those things we just wrote. We didn't have any input. We didn't know what we were doing. We just kind of wrote it, and we sent it to them, and they said, well, we really like it. We don't know quite what to do with it. I think that was on a Monday. It wound up being on television, I think, 8 days later.
Holy cow.
Yeah, which what? That doesn't happen. Even when they love it, it doesn't happen within a week. It usually takes a month, and, you know,
right.
It takes ahead of time. Yeah, it was just very quirky, and I really liked the song. I liked the lyric of it, and everything just felt great, and Pear is such a brilliant writer and producer and guitar player. That's him playing the solos and things on it. So it was one of those songs that just kind of came out of the ether, and now it's in your iTunes collection.
There we go. Well, this is All I Want Is You. It's from Bill's album, So Far, So Good, available on iTunes. Click the link on the show. Buy it tonight. We're going to play that and come back with more with Bill in just a second.
Tell me, where were the words when I needed them? Why is my tongue so tied? I'm dying to pour my heart out. Did I run and hide? I'm too cool from a distance, but I blush when you turn my way. I've got to pull myself together. I got to hear my own self say, hey, come a little bit closer. I believe you feel it too. For everything in this whole world,
that's off of his album So Far So Good, available on iTunes now. There's a link on the show page. I make it really easy to support our guests. Just click that. You'll go to iTunes, and you can buy it tonight. But what you really also want to do, and I get goosebumps saying this because I love the book so much, click the link for Bill's website. You can go buy The Amazing Adventures of a Marginally Successful Musician tonight, and he will send it out to you. And it is absolutely worth the read. If you are like, well, you know, I'm not really a musician, I'm not really a singer, doesn't matter. It's a it's a fun book to read. So even if I didn't like music and I only liked cross-stitching or something like that, I would still read this book because the, you know, a widget's a widget. In this case, Bill's a musician. So that's the point of view that he writes from. But you can take this to just about anything and get a great read out of it and some good life lessons. So Bill, welcome, you know, back to the second half of the show. We've got you for about another half an hour here. You said that during the break here that you had something that you wanted to bring up. So I'm opening the floor to you, my friend.
Okay, well, this just hit me as, I think, 30 seconds before we went on the air. I've never really made this connection before, but about a year ago, I got a pretty good gig, which I guess we can talk about, right?
Yes, please.
Well, a year ago, coming almost a year ago to the day, it was actually September 22nd, I got a gig playing bass for a guy by the name of Neil Diamond. Now, I'm pretty sure everybody knows who he is, and your listeners over in the UK allow me to say thank you to them because we just got back the end of July, and we spent 6 weeks over there, and it was absolutely incredible. And so the idea of the what I wanted to express to you before we get too far into the other stories is on September 21st, I came home from a tour with a bunch of the old British Invasion bands, and we can talk about that in a minute, too, if you like. But
sure.
The important part is this. I came home on a Monday night, which was September 21st. September 22nd, on my calendar, I had scheduled an appointment as a vocal coach for one of my prize students. And I had to call that student and say, listen, I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to cancel tomorrow's session. And my student said, why? And I said, well, I have an audition to go to. And I didn't really give him all the information because I didn't know how it was going to go. But, ladies and gentlemen, that vocal student was none other than our host, Garrett Miller, who I was scheduled to see you that next day on Tuesday.
I remember that. Yeah, yep. I remember that, and I didn't know. And it's actually I was in the studio with Brian, and he goes, "Well, so did Bill tell you?" And I said, "Tell me what?" He just said he needed to reschedule, and so I was so happy when I heard the news. But I mean, tell the story. I mean, you now have to tell the whole story about, you know, how it all came together, because that's the best thing.
Yeah, I'm looking at the clock. It's 7:33. I don't know if I can tell this, this story in less than 7 minutes, but I'll try.
Okay.
Essentially, and I'll try to incorporate a couple of different things at the same time. I have been very fortunate to be a bass player and a singer and a background singer and whatever for a bunch of different acts. I work with a producer, a fantastic producer, by the name of Peter Asher. Peter has produced everybody from – he's responsible for all the great James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt records. He produced and managed both of those artists. The guitar player in that band is none other, again, than your producer and my friend Brian Pothier, along with – let me give the other guys a little shout-out. Jeff Ross is the musical director, and Steve Aho is the drummer. So the four of us together and sometimes with other people were a core band – for a bunch of the old British Invasion bands, everybody from members of the Hollies, Denny Lane, who was the guitar player from Paul McCartney and Wings, and the Moody Blues, a couple of guys from the Hollies, Peter and Gordon, Chad and Jeremy, Jerry and the Pacemakers, Billy J. Kramer, the Tremolos. These are all bands from that time, from the 60s. Some of your audience would be very familiar with them. Others, if you're younger than 40 years old, you might not know them by name, but you would know every band I just mentioned if you heard their songs. And so as a core band, we were traveling all over, essentially North America, all over the United States and Canada, playing with these bands from the 60s. I came home on a Monday afternoon from a tour with these guys. And it was one of the greatest tours ever for me. I was home for a couple of hours, and I got a phone call. I had just gotten off a plane a few hours before. My ears were all stopped up. I was driving around. My Bluetooth kept falling out of my ear, and I couldn't hear what this guy was saying when he called me. And I pulled into a parking space and said to this person who had just called me, I said, look, I'm so sorry. I have to apologize, but I've been on the phone with you for about 40 seconds. I have not heard a word you said. My earpiece is falling out. My ears are clogged up. I just got off a plane. Can we start again? And the guy says to me, sure. Well, as I was telling you, we're looking for a bass player, and you come very highly recommended. Those are his exact words. And I said, well, that's great. Tell me who the band is, because I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. So, and what band is this? And there's like an awkward pause, and he says, Neil Diamond. And I waited for the word tribute. Now, people think I'm kidding when I said that, but I'm thinking it's some guy who's going to say, hey, we have a Neil Diamond tribute band, and, you know, we play around Los Angeles, and we make $100 a night. Would you like to play with us? Because some of those bands are great. That would be a nice gig, you know. And I said, Neil Diamond. And he said, yeah. I said, well, okay. You know, how do we do this? And essentially, they called me about 6 times in the next 4 hours.
Uh-huh.
I honestly still have those voice messages on my phone. I've kept them. And so I asked, you know, where did you get my number from? And the response was, there's a great producer by the name of Don Was, if anybody wants to look him up, W-A-S. Don Was has produced more records than I can count, just some brilliant stuff. He did some stuff with Bonnie Raitt. He wrote music for television. I never really knew him well. I met him a couple of times over the years, just the way musicians meet other musicians in clubs and conferences and whatever. But somehow or another, Don Was held on to my number, and he produced Neil Diamond's latest record, which is called Melody Road, which I would suggest everybody buy because it's really a fantastic record. Neil's in
it really,
better form
yeah.
than ever.
It, yeah. You would and think, so, you know, not to get off track, but I will tell you, I as soon as you said Neil Diamond, I actually went out and bought that CD and downloaded it on iTunes and was like, holy cow, this man has produced yet another hit record. It's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody associated with that team is fantastic.
Yeah.
And so Don was the guy who recommended me for this gig. Hmm. So I called back that night and they said, look, I know this is very last minute and I know this is a little unorthodox, but can you come down tomorrow at 3:00, bring your bass and audition? No charts, nothing ahead of time, no charts, no CDs, no nothing, just come in cold. So I went down there, I did the audition, and I was there for about 20 minutes, and then the door opens and this guy walks in and says, hi, I'm Neil. I said, yeah, I know, you know, I recognize you. And we talked a little bit. And they said, okay, well, you know, we'll probably get back to you in a few months. I was auditioning for the world tour, which we're currently on. We were just on a break. But the idea was I was auditioning on September 22nd for the tour, which started in February of 2015. So I auditioned essentially 4 months ahead of time, which is about right, because they have to decide who they want, who they're going to keep, and you're going to start rehearsals in January, so that's about right. I said, okay, well, I'll wait to hear from you guys. 2 hours later, 3 hours later, they called me and said, well, Neil was very happy with what you did, and he liked what he heard, and he wants to know if you will come on the promotional tour that we're doing. We're doing the Today Show and the Tonight Show in New York. We're going over and playing the London Palladium. We're doing BBC Radio. I said, wow, that sounds exciting. I'd love to do it. When do we leave? And they said, Sunday.
Oh.
So, yeah. So essentially what happened was this. I got a call Monday night at about, you know, 5 p.m, I'll say, and then proceeded to have 6 more phone calls up till about 10 o'clock at night, ending with, can you come in tomorrow on Tuesday? So on Tuesday, I have to cancel my vocal student, Garrett Miller. I have to tell him I can't make it because I have this audition. So I got a phone call on Monday, did the audition on Tuesday, 3 hours later, they said, you're on. Wednesday, I went down and signed some tax forms and releases and things. Thursday, I did an audition. A rehearsal with the guitar player. Friday and Saturday, I went home and learned as many Neil Diamond songs as I could. And Sunday, I got on the plane and went to New York.
Oh, that I love that story, Bill. You don't even know. I don't think I can smile any farther apart than I am right now. That just is a fantastic story. You know, and that's the call that everybody wants to get. But you know, this is something that happens, you know, once every 30 years or something like that. And you know, you were just at the right place at the right time. So you go on this promo tour, and I remember you telling me stories when you get back from the promo tour, going, you know, I don't know, you know, nothing's set in stone and that type of thing. So what happened during the promo tour and afterwards that really kind of sealed the deal for you?
Well, you know, I mean, with all respect to everybody involved, it's Neil Diamond. He's one of the biggest names in show business for all these years. He's still one of the most prolific songwriters. He's sold 130 million records. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's Grammys. It's, you know, it's a big deal, to say the least. And I was so flattered that they took me on for the 3-week promo tour that I really didn't, I wouldn't have been too upset if that's all I got out of it. That would be a great lifetime.
Sure.
Well, Diamond for 3 weeks. Well, when we come back, the fact is, this is a big organization, and there's a lot at stake, and they're doing world tours, and they needed to make sure that I was the right guy. When I say, with all due respect to everybody involved, I actually mean me. It's easy for me to say, hey, I'm the right guy.
Right, yeah.
You know, of course, that's what I would say.
Trust
but,
me, you know.
The guy who sells 130 million records, he might have a little input here. So
sure, yeah.
What they did was the management called me and said, look, there's no problem. We're still deciding. And that doesn't mean they're sitting down, you know, hemming and hawing over this every day, or they're not having meetings every day. It's just that, well, we're just going to take a look at things. We're going to let the dust settle. We just came home from Europe. And let's just think about it a little bit. And you know, they wanted to keep it open to where they could audition other people and explore their options. And I really had to understand that. So about a month later, it was about 4 weeks later, they finally called and said, what we'd like to do is this. We would like to offer you the job. And can we please, the way they phrased it was, we have good news and bad news.
Uh-oh.
They said, we'd like to offer you the job of being Neil Diamond's bass player for the 2015 World Tour. I said, wow. And they said, we'd like to fly to Nashville to do just some private rehearsals with you and the drummer being absolutely a legend in the drumming community. His name is Ron Tutt. Ron Tutt.
Oh, my gosh.
Played drums for Elvis, among other people. Ron Tutt has played on more records than you can count again. Everything from Cat Stevens to the Carpenters to the theme from MASH, Roy Orbison, you know, just one of the all-time greats. And they said, so you have the gig and you'll fly to Nashville next week to rehearse privately with Ron, just you as a rhythm section, so you guys can, you know, get a feel for each other. I said, great. You said there's good news and bad news. What's the bad news? And they said, well, no, the bad news is you have to go to Nashville. You know, we were hoping you wouldn't have to do that. I said, that's not bad news for me. First of all, I love Nashville. I go to Nashville.
Yeah, Nashville's awesome.
I said, so first of all, I'm going to a place where it's like my second home, and I'm going to be in a room playing the greatest music in the world by the greatest, you know, American songwriter, Neil Diamond, with the most legendary drummer on the planet. This is not bad news. This is not bad news for me. And they just said, well, you know, I know it's last minute and you have to kind of uproot yourself. I said, no, I'll be fine. So Ronnie is just the greatest guy in the world. I love him to death. Ron Tutt is my favorite drummer, is everybody's favorite drummer. Ron was very patient with me because I had a lot to learn, and I was replacing a guy who, God love him, has had the bass chair with Neil for 44 years, a wonderful bass player by the name of Riney, and he's such a great guy. And everybody loved him, and he decided to step down. And so, you know, Reiny Press is his name. He's an Orange County guy, actually. I hope he's listening. Hello, Reiny. So it was a major change, and they made it as easy as possible for me. And as they looked at it, as the downside was me having to go to Nashville, but that was hardly a downside for me.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Well, let's do this. I want to play one more song, Now I'm in Love. This is another song off of Bill's album, So Far, So Good, available on iTunes. Again, the link is on the show. Just go and click it there. Bill, tell us about Now I'm in Love. We're going to play it and come back and wrap up the show with more with your tour stories with Neil Diamond.
Well, this song is similar to the other one in the sense that apparently your ears are quite sophisticated, because I did this one also, co-wrote it with my good friend Per Scheller and recorded it at his studio. He has a home studio that's essentially a converted garage, and everything that comes out of his place is so brilliant. We were on a tear there for a while where, essentially, when you write music for television, you write 100 songs in hopes that maybe one or two get placed. We had a stretch there where I think we wrote and recorded 14 songs, and 12 of them were on the air within about 4 months.
Wow.
And this is one of them. This is called And Now I'm in Love. And it's just kind of an easy listening kind of simple guitar strum song. And the whole trick of the lyric is, now I'm in love and there's no way out, in the sense that it's a good thing. So we wrote this and just threw it together, and it's me playing, I think, acoustic guitar and singing and playing bass, and Per is doing pretty much everything else.
There we go. Here's Now I'm in Love off of Bill's album So Far, So Good on iTunes. Buy it tonight.
And now I'm
And that's Now I'm in Love by Bill Sinclair, VIP special guest star for the night tonight. So we've been talking about his time on the road, Neil Diamond, on his big world tour. And Bill just got back in July, which seems just like a couple of weeks ago, but it's actually been a month or two now. So you've had time to kind of climatize and get your feet on the ground a little bit. What were some of the fun things that happened while you're on the road? And maybe if you could tell us, you know, what it's like touring with Neil compared to maybe touring differently.
Well, I've done the tours where you get four guys in a van and you run around the country and stay in a Motel 6. And honestly, those are some of the greatest times of my life. I admire anybody that still does it. I will continue to do that as well. When you do a world tour like this, it really is, they spoil us rotten. I have the greatest job in the world. I have the greatest boss in the world, although he hates when we call him boss. He doesn't like that. But Neil Diamond is the greatest employer, greatest friend, greatest everything. He truly is. And he takes care of us very well. We fly. We fly first class, essentially. If we're on a bus, it's not a tour bus. It's like a Greyhound bus. It's very comfortable, and it's only a couple of hours. We're never sleeping on the bus. We have great hotel rooms. It's a first-class operation through and through. And I don't mind telling you, Neil is such a great guy. He advertises my book sometimes at rehearsals. He held up my book at one of the rehearsals and went, okay, everybody grab a copy. One time he kind of fake yelled at me. He wasn't really mad, but there's one spot in the show where everybody in the band gets a solo. And I go to take a bass solo. And he said, hey, wait a minute. It has to be longer than that. And I laughed because I thought, no one ever asked the bass player to play more. And he holds up a copy of my book and says, okay, you see this now? Where you say marginally successful? You're in the big time now, okay? So change the name of your book, number one. And number two, play a longer bass solo. So I thought that's just the kind of guy he is. He's got a great sense of humor. He's looking out for his band all the time. He wants to give us the spotlight. And it's just a phenomenal thing all the way around. The band is incredible. The songs are incredible. I got to fill one of my lifelong dreams. Just in May of 2015, we played the Hollywood Bowl not once, but twice in 1 week and sold it out. And it was just an incredible experience. I mean, you would come out for like a little rehearsal sound check at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm looking at 20,000 empty seats saying, man, in 5 hours, this place is going to be rocking. You know, it's incredible. It's like a city. It's like a city came to see you play. And it has been like that all around the world. And a month from today, we leave and we go to New Zealand and Australia, and we're gone for about 5 weeks. And hopefully,
You're in the Brisbane area or Sydney area, tell me the dates that you're going to be there offline, because I'm going to ping all my friends down there and make sure that they try to connect with you or at least say hi in some capacity to you. Okay, real quick, we've got a couple minutes left here, Bill. Number one, I'm going to ask that when you get back from New Zealand and Australia, you come back on the show and talk about that or just about anything you want to, because I love having you here. But do you have maybe a minute or two of advice for any budding musicians that, you know, I know we're going to all go out and get The Amazing Adventures of a Marginally Successful Musician tonight. You're going to buy it from Bill's website, BillSinclair.com, and go buy his album, So Far, So Good. But maybe as a teaser, any words of wisdom for people out there who might want to take on an exciting career as a musician?
Yes, I would say spend as much time as you can rehearsing and refining your craft and honing your craft and learning your instrument, but spend an equal amount of time on your administration and your organizational skills, because there are far too many musicians, particularly in a city like Los Angeles, that are so technically gifted. And everybody sees them and says, my goodness, how come this guy isn't further along in his career? And the fact is, he was the guy that didn't show up on time. He didn't learn the songs. He showed up with coffee stains on his T-shirt instead of, you know, looking right. And you know, people think I'm kind of being silly when I say things like that. But the fact is, you have to, it's a business. It's the music business. It's not the music party. It's the music business. You have to approach it like a business. And if you, you know, the example I always make is, if you graduate from the Harvard Law School, if you graduate top of your class from the Harvard Law School, you're pretty much guaranteed a great job that next Monday morning. Being the fastest guitar player in Los Angeles guarantees you absolutely nothing. You mm-hmm. have to have more to offer than that. So you better know the songs that you're asked to learn. You better look the way they expect you to look. If you're in a country band, you better be prepared to wear a cowboy hat. If you're in a rock band, you have to look a certain way. You have to be on time. You have to be prepared. You have to play appropriately. You can't bring in a truckload of equipment just because that's what you want. Your organizational skills have to be top-notch, and most people just don't get that. They kind of think that if I just play faster and louder, that I should get the gig, and that is not the reality. So I would say definitely be a businessman and get yourself organized and get yourself, to use the old phrase, you know, just get it together before you do an audition or a gig. You have to be clicking on all 8 cylinders in order to make it work.
There we go. Everybody, it's Mr. Bill Sinkay. My hat's off to you, Bill. Thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you've got a million things you could be doing tonight other than this, so I am so grateful to you. We're going to end the show tonight with a song that Bill shared with me a long time ago, and it's secretly my favorite, and I'm going to tell the world tonight. I play it all the time. And this is a song that Bill wrote, and there's a little humor in it as well, and this is a song called Rhinoplasty. We'll see you live on Tuesday.
Girl, I've had my eye on you, and I know you're looking fine, and I'd love to wine and dine. Got a nose on you, it's the biggest nose I've seen. I'm not trying to be mean, I know what you want, yes I do indeed. I'm a plastic surgeon, and baby what you need, rhinoplasty. Cut that sucker down to size, rhinoplasty. Then you won't have to cross your eyes, rhinoplasty. Have you told too many lies? As long as it is wide, and I damn near fell inside, baby. I wouldn't lie to you, I won't commit perjury, but I'll perform the surgery. I got what you want, and I ain't to please. Let me open my umbrella, cause I think you're gonna sneeze, rhinoplasty. Cut that sucker down to size, rhinoplasty. Then you won't have to cross your eyes, rhinoplasty. Have you told too many lies?
then you won't have to cross your eyes. Rhinoplasty. Have you told too many lies? Roses are red, violets are blue. Your nose is ringing, I think it's for you. That nostril is hostile, I can't concentrate with that Washington Monument stuck on your face. Yeah.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.